All of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com and the Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. The Ed Morse name has been on great family-owned dealerships across Florida for more than 70 years, including Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Those are Hillsborough County's only Cadillac dealerships. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, you've heard General Manager Brian Danahy right here on the podcast. They are just west of 275 on Fletcher, and you want to get to edmorsecadillactampa.com. Tremendous new February offers are available now. Taking a look, the 2019 CTS, $279 per month lease. All the details at edmorsecadillactampa.com. And many Cadillac select models, 2019s, zero down, zero security, first payment also zero at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. And Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, you've heard Ira talk about them right there on Causeway Boulevard. He was out there, as you remember, talking to a Lightning head coach, John Cooper, and they are a wonderful dealership. Looking at their website, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com, you'll see 2019 XT5 Luxury, the fantastic crossover that Ira likes so much. $395 per month lease. Get all the details. These offers I've mentioned are only good through the end of the month, but there is so much at the website, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. And thanks again to Ed Morse for all of their support. Check out joebucksfan.com. You'll always see offers there. And let's get back to Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Another edition of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Did I pronounce your last name right, Ira Kaufman, finally?
You're one of the six people in this Bay Area that's ever done it.
All right, we got...
In 40 years.
we got the Ira Kaufman Podcast here on JoeBucksFan.com. I'm Lee DeCamper. I'm back from Atlanta. I'm back from the doctor.
You're back from the dead.
I'm back from the dead, you know, after a week and a half. And of course, we have the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, the King of Newport, Richie, the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman.
I answer to all those titles, Lee. It's Kaufman Tires, Kaufman Podcast. There you go. Lee, we got Van Morrison in the background. I haven't said that. I'm looking at you and I'm saying, you ain't exactly my brown-eyed girl over here. DeCamper, this is the way we start our podcast. It is February. We're... Buck fans are wondering what's coming next for this team. There's nothing going on. We got our new coach. The combine's a couple of weeks away. The meetings are 6 weeks away. The draft is more than 2 months away. There's nothing going on. We're here to say differently. We don't miss a week.
Oh, no.
We don't miss a week of podcasts, unlike all these other ones that take a vacation fest for a month and then go to, Hawaii and Montana and all parts unknown. We stick it out. Because this is the Buck Podcast.
I love the old parts unknown. It's like an old wrestling. You know, they introduce some wrestler, the mask comes from parts unknown.
Like the they might have said that about George the Animal Steel from parts unknown.
Yeah, among others. Yeah. Well, you know what? Steve Isbitz is not here. He's got a family issue to attend to. Hope everything gets better there. Of course, I'm really bummed out that I missed it by about a half an hour because my doctor's appointment ran a lot longer than I expected, but the Joe Henderson appearance...
Can't believe you missed a lunch at Hooters, DeCamper. That's the real shock.
Yeah, and then you got Henderson on top of it there. But I'm bummed out about that. Joe's just a wonderful guy. One important thing...
You used to work with Henderson. You've got nothing but praise for him as a journalist. I've heard you very rarely speak of people as highly as you speak of Joe Henderson. As a boss, he really made a big impression on you at the Tribune.
A huge impression. He's the consummate journalist. I learned a lot from him, even though I was in newspapers for, 10, 12 years. I learned a lot from him. He helped me out a great deal. I am indebted to Joe Henderson. This is why. And this is for our readers at JoeBucksFan.com. Without Joe Henderson, JoeBucksFan.com may not exist.
That's a strong statement.
I was working sports in the sports department. Joe Henderson was my supervisor. Steve, who was Steve came from the sports department, and he took a news gig in Clearwater, where he was a news reporter, cops reporter on the weekends, news reporter during the week, and he did a hell of a job.
I can't see Isbitz dealing with homicides. It's just a bad matchup.
Well, I got a great story about that, but I don't know if I'll tell it on this podcast, but I got a great story about that. At any rate, Joe called me up one day, and he said, hey, we're making some changes. Would you like to take over sports in Pinellas? I jumped at that chance, and part of the reason, I worked a lot out of the Clearwater office. Well, Steve and I had known each other prior to that, But we got to know each other better because I was working on the office. That's where Steve was ensconced. Is that the right word?
Ensconced.
There we go. At that place in Clearwater in Gulf to Bay Boulevard, right off of US 19, that's where the genesis of Joe Bucks
Fan
started.
That's the big bang of Joe Bucks Fan.
Bucks Fan. Only we didn't have a hot blonde working there. And, you know, we initially...
This is like 08? Yeah, something like that. Maybe a little more than 10
years. 06 maybe, 07. And initially, and maybe before that, but initially we were going to start up a Rays site because we thought the local media, and that was, you know, pre-JoeBucksFan.com, pre-blogs, although I think Cork Gaines Rays Index was around at the time. We thought Vince DiMoli got a complete and utter pass by the local media. The stuff that guy pulled, the stunts, the way he treated people, the way he treated reporters, physically tried to attack them, threaten them, get in their face. We thought that guy got a complete and utter pass. And we were going to start a Rays site if for no other reason than just attack DiMoli.
And this is about the time Joe Maddon was coming along.
Yeah.
Who was going to turn around the fortunes of the franchise.
Exactly.
You didn't know that.
No.
But they were dreadful at that time.
Yeah. The way he treated reporters, and it's not just reporters, people, fans,
so
cops.
So how'd you switch from Joe Rays to Joe Bucks?
There was money in Bucks Fan. There was money there. Essentially... Steve had access to some of the traffic data from TBO.com. And when you or Roy Cummings, and one in particular, Roy Cummings, and Steve says my story is all screwed up, but it's a good story, so I'm repeating it. Roy Cummings would write a story about, I think he's a football coach now at Pasco County, Benjamin. He was a backup snapper.
Ryan Benjamin.
Yeah, yeah. They'd sign him off the street to you know, compete for the long snapper job.
That's right.
That would get more traffic than a front page story on the Tribune. And right then, Steve said, you know what? There's a market for this. There's a market for this.
Any trivial Bucks story. Any trivial Bucks.
Remote, didn't matter. Anything Bucks, it got traffic. And that told Steve, there's a market for this. If we could somehow tap into that market. And that's how we flipped from Rays to the Bucks. And then I vividly remember when Steve calling me up and he said, let's do this.
You know, I want to back that up, Lee. My column that I wrote on Wednesday, Lee, it was a little bit of a different column. It was about the business of football and the business of the Bucks and how you can't lose money in the NFL. And and I looked up, and the Kansas City Star, which is a paper that you know very well, wrote a hell of a story. They got their hands on the tax returns of the Chiefs from a few years ago. And it showed, and you can't get these things, but they got them. And somehow it fell into public records, and the Star pounced on it.
A lawsuit, wasn't it?
So So credit to the Star. They had a couple of investigative reporters. Anyway, it showed all the things that you and I have assumed, which is, number one, things like parking, concessions, and Lee, I dare say even fan attendance, pale in comparison in terms of revenues to what they are guaranteed every year through TV money. And a couple of other things that you and I wouldn't have necessarily thought about. One is something called NFL Enterprises, which is
Internet.
Sunday Ticket, NFL Network.
Yeah.
And the other one and the other one is merchandising.
Ah.
Everything shared. So it's $100 million from each of those things.
Ooh.
To each team. That's $200 million. So I asked the question, and I want to bring it up to you right here and now on this podcast and hold your feet to the fire. And I said, some Buck fans suggest, and I don't think they're far off base, that if your profit margin in the NFL, where you have a salary cap, unlike baseball, if your profit margin was linked more directly to your place in the standings, wouldn't that affect the incentive of ownership? And you can start right here with the Bucks. You can't lose money, Lee.
Yeah.
No matter how many 5-11 seasons you throw out there, your value of your franchise will go up.
Sure. You know the Glazers better than I. I'm lucky and fortunate enough to talk to them once in a blue moon. I don't get any impression whatsoever they don't have a desire to win.
I agree with that. Desire be even heightened? If the profit margin was more tight.
Well, look how much money they're spending on ex-coaches. And if that doesn't motivate you to find the right coach and to start winning and to stop paying guys for not coaching, I don't know what will.
They did put some money into stadium renovations.
Yes, they did. Yeah, yes,
but
they did.
To try to enhance the fan experience.
Yes, they did. Now, what you're speaking of is something my dad said back in the 70s. There's no real incentive for NFL owners to win because they guaranteed pot.
Your father was on that.
He was on it back in the 70s. He was like, there's no incentive for Bill Bidwell to win. He goes, well, what's the incentive? And he talked about the winnings that they have, and there's no incentive.
In fact, your payroll is probably going to go up.
My dad had argued something like that. He said the expenses for a team, and again, this is a different economy back in the 70s. My dad said the expenses for a team to go on the road in the playoffs would hurt you more than not making a playoffs, you know? So, oh, we got a fan here, young fan. So, yeah, my dad was in that back in the 70s. My dad was a self-made businessman, and he had degrees in economics and whatnot. But he said that back in the 70s. But, again, that's totally different.
Nothing changed all these years later.
Probably not.
The NFL model is the same.
And
there's one for all for one. Yeah, you know, that's it's kind of socialism.
Very much is. I know, I've heard.
Now, that's a bad word. I understand.
No, but, yeah.
It's worked very well for the sport.
It's a loaded word. Yes, I've had friends of mine say that, back in the 80s, that the NFL is sports version of socialism. I've heard that before.
Now, I want to mention...
And it's not inaccurate.
Lee, the reason I brought that column up is because in one part of the column, I talk about how some people, it's becoming trendy to talk about the NFL's trending downwards with attendance, some ratings are down. But Lee, I point out, I think it was 2017, not last year, but 2017. 37 of the top 50 highest rated shows on U.S. television were NFL broadcasts. So, yeah, it's a bit of a decline in some areas because overall sports viewing is in decline because it's so fractured in so many different directions. Everybody's in, you know, now Netflix is a big player in TV. It's taken away, you know, a little bit. But, Lee, it's coming from such an exalted position that they can handle these, quote, declines better than anybody.
Yeah.
And when Goodell took over, which is, I think, more than 10 years ago, from Tagliabue.
Yeah.
Maybe 06, 07. Revenues, I believe, were about $7 billion. He said, I want it to be $25 billion by 2027. Everybody said, this guy's crazy. Well, now it's 14.
Yeah, they're getting there.
All of a sudden, it doesn't look that outlandish. Who knows what the future holds? But football's hold on America, Lee, is very powerful.
It's growing.
And that's a big reason why you went into this venture.
Oh, yeah,
You
true.
Said it's football.
Yeah.
We're in Florida.
Well, as I always, you know, Roy Cummings goes crazy when certain sports don't get enough, not publicity.
Enough play.
There we go. And I just tell Roy, we live in a football world. And he doesn't like that when I say that. He doesn't like that. And I'm a baseball fan, too, but I know that baseball is nothing compared to, and it's getting worse for baseball, but nothing compared to football, nothing compared to the NFL.
And it's a big college foot, you know, it's just a football sport.
Well, Andy Staples, you know him quite well, formerly of the Tribune, currently with Sports Illustrated. He said for years college football is the number two sport in America. I think he's on to something. I don't think that's arguable.
Some people like college football better than like the NFL.
My dad used to be that way, although he loved the NFL. And my dad used to be that way. But this is back in the 70s. You know, the wishbone. I hated the wishbone. I thought my dad was nuts. Now I'm like him. I'll take a good college game almost over a good NFL. Almost. Now, I love the NFL. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, some of those, like, I think I spoke about this on a podcast before. I love watching the Big 12 because that's like, sure, there's no defense, but it's like crazy offense football. It's entertaining.
You know, I think it's very rare after a big college football game for people to be focusing on the officiating, whereas in the NFL, it's a big problem.
Exactly.
And it's getting worse.
Yeah, you've always said it, and I always thought you were a bullseye for saying it. You're so accurate. And I think that subject...
You can't have that water cooler Monday morning focusing on the field judge.
Yeah,
that's bad.
I think I first heard you say that 2 years ago, and I was conditioned. That's the word I use. I was conditioned. When you see a big play in the NFL, like a 40-yard pass... And it's a close defense. Not even.
But the ball's on the ground. Yeah, and the ball's on the ground.
Either the ball's on the ground or the guy catches it. You're looking in the, at least me. I'm conditioned to look in the corners of the screen looking for a yellow hanky. And that, like you always said, that shouldn't be. If you're always looking for a flag, you've got a problem.
And I think Goodell realizes that, Lee. I think he even mentioned something like that. Like, we can't have the Monday focus being on the officiating. That's a negative for the NFL.
Well,
let's see what Rich McKay and his boys do, you know, Lee, they go down to Fort Myers or Marco Island or something like that in the weeks preceding the NFL owners' meeting.
Oh, okay.
And they always go to the same place. It's always Florida.
Oh, is that right?
And they bring their golf clubs. That's number one. You know, and they hash it out for a week or two. And there's some players, maybe some former players, some executives. It's a big collaboration. All right, we got a problem. What are we going to do about it? And that's how they formulate. They got all the statistics. They do a ton of research.
Competition committee?
Analytics. Competition committee. Analytics, big, big, big. How many pass interferences were called last year as compared to the last 5 years? And they got graphs and this and that. And that's how they do it. But they do it in Florida. They don't go to Alaska. They go to Florida. And it's late. You know, it's mid-March. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Down there. And they sneak in, you know, 36 holes, you know, during the week. So, Lee, what's going on in Buck World? You know, it's, you know, going into the second week of February. Anything going on? Anything going on?
Otherwise, so first off, the release yesterday of Matt Bryant, former Bucks kicker.
Apparently took him by surprise, Lee. Apparently.
Yeah, and it shouldn't have. It shouldn't have because, you know, the guy is, what, 44?
43, I think.
43?
Yeah, 43.
And he got hurt last year.
Yes, he did. And it was against the Bucks, right?
Game-winning kick against the Bucks.
Game-winning kick.
Which killed Mike Smith's career. Killed Mike Smith's career. At any rate, Matt Bryant, he also dealt with a bad back. And when you're dealing with a bad back with a kicker, that's scary. And he didn't throw in the fact that he's 44. He's not getting younger.
He's had a hell of a career, Lee.
Oh, he's had an outstanding career. And Bucks fans, you know, like the very first, when I first heard of this, a guy Twittered me, like, hey, Matt Bryant's released.
He's out there. He's available.
Yeah, let's you know, break the curse. You know, that sounds fantastic. But as I replied to the guy, hey, that sounds good, but you got to remember, this is 2019, not 2009. Now,
tell people about the curse that don't know about it.
Well, Matt Bryant was cut by Mark Domenech. Over, he nickel and dimed it. Nickel and dimed
after the 08 season,
yeah.
Once Domenech came in.
Yeah, he nickel and dimed Bryant, got rid of him for Mike Nugent, who Nugent himself turned out to be a decent kicker, but not with the Bucks.
So the Bucks were on the youth kick. In 2009,
yeah.
They had jettisoned Warwick Dunn, Brooks, and the Galloway.
Cato June?
Yeah, it was a big youth kick. And here came Raheem Morris.
Ike Hilliard.
So they were rebuilding. Mm-hmm. They were rebuilding. So they dumped Bryant.
Yeah, and Domenech is up front. They nickel and dime him. And, well, Domenech said, you know, he had injury issues or whatever. There's no debating. No debating. Since that move, the Bucks have stunk, specifically at kicker. Now, there was a four-year span there with basketball-playing Connor Barth where the Bucks had a decent kicker. You take Barth away, this has been a hellhole for kickers.
And Bryant did a superb job for the Falcons.
Yeah, in the same division, faces the Bucks twice a year to rub salt in the wound for Bucks fans. Now, that is, you know, that may, when Mark Domenech passes, on his tombstone, the epitaph may have something to do with Matt Bryant.
He might have said that to you. He might have.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So, all right, so now Bryant's available. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know.
Bring him in for a look. What do you do?
Well, my first reaction is, hell yeah, bring him in. But my second reaction is, as I stated earlier, he dealt with injuries last year, including a bad back. He's 44. Now people are going to say, hey, Adam Vinatieri. Okay, fine. There's Adam Vinatieri. Name me another 46-year-old kicker. I'll give you a couple hours.
Are you high on Cairo Santos? You okay with him? You want competition? What do you want?
They need to bring in competition.
Then I got to draft a kicker.
I hope not.
Right.
That's not unforeseeable, but I sure hope
you,
not.
You want training camp competition?
Yeah, I think after the debacle with Aguayo, they didn't give him any competition. They need to have competition.
He seems fairly reliable from 40 to... You know, 42 yards in, but he doesn't look like a long-range kicker, Santos.
No, he doesn't.
And other teams have long-range kickers.
Matt Bryant.
So it hurts.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, look at Zuerlein. I mean, the guy's fabulous.
Even with a bum foot.
Yeah, even with a bum foot. So
that's
an advantage. It's a competitive advantage.
That kick he had against the Saints.
I don't know how much that would have been good from.
Easy 70.
That could have been a 70-yard field goal.
Easy. I mean... You see how many that cleared the goal with the crossbar?
Fantastic.
Holy smokes. That was the kick of ages, I think. That was the kick of ages. And clutch? Couldn't get more clutch. Your season is on the line.
You think there would be hesitance from Light or the Glazers to even entertain the notion of bringing Bryant back and sort of acknowledging that You made a huge mistake 10 years ago letting him go. Does that factor in at all?
It shouldn't.
It should.
It should.
That's a good answer. It should.
It shouldn't, because you know, this is a business.
The answer is, can he help you?
Yeah.
Can he help?
Exactly. I mean, look, the books brought back Warwick Dunn. There was bitter feelings there. Warwick Dunn wanted to payday. Chucky wanted to keep him. He left because of money, and I don't blame him. And fences were mended, so to speak, and they brought him back. He did quite well when he came back. Yeah, you got to be above that. You got to be above that. That's petty. I don't think Light's petty. I don't think the Glazers are petty.
Surprise,
you know,
surprised the Falcons let him go?
A little bit. But it sounds like they're in a money crunch, doesn't it? Sounds like they're in a money crunch. It's a little bit surprising.
I think they just dumped Robert Alford.
But apparently he's really slipping.
I don't hear any Buck fans screaming for Robert Alford.
Well, no, they're not, but I think they'd take him over some of the corners the Bucks have. Yeah. Now, real quick, I'll say this. This may shock you. A lot of people, we were talking about kickers, and a lot of people got on Swaggy Baker for giving Aguayo heat in practices.
That famous scene
on Hard Knocks,
Hard Knocks.
You know me, I was no fan of Baker. I thought he was a clown, and I think my feelings were reinforced. He should have never been signed. You had that information before anybody. But I thought Baker was criticized unfairly. I liked that he was giving Aguayo heat. You know, as he said in Hard Knocks, like, hey, if he can't handle it in practice, how's he going to handle it in the game?
I understand that.
So I as much as I did not like Swaggy Baker, I had no issue with him, you know, heckling in practices. I fully understood where he was coming from. That rubbed a lot of fans the wrong way. I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it at all. But that's about the only break I'll give Swaggy Baker.
Lee, what's your form and opinion of the fans on Baker for other reasons? Then everything he does is going to be under scrutiny.
Sure.
And possibly misinterpreted. That comes with the territory.
Can you misinterpret the tree scene?
I don't see how, baby. What's Jameis been yakking about on? What'd he say on Radio Rolly? You monitor everything. How many shows did he go on?
Three that I know for sure. And I love Jameis, so I got to preface this. I love Jameis to death. I'm a big Jameis fan. But Jameis is saying enough that he needs to tone it down.
You were one of his great defenders even during the whole suspension period.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, I can't condone some of the stuff he's done, clearly.
You
but
said keep this guy, stick with him, give him a chance. Yeah. Who you got that's better? Who you got?
Exactly. Yeah. Certainly not Ryan Tannehill. I mean, come on. But Jameis is coming across like a goofus, like a doof. You listen to some of the stuff he's saying. He's mangling the English language. He's saying stuff that makes no sense. And, of course, the guys interviewing him, they're not going like, what? They're not going to question him.
Does he have his swagger back a little bit?
Yeah, that I like. All right. He's got the swagger. He's getting to be back the more Jameis. But now, one thing that he did say that I don't have a problem with, and Steve wrote about it, I don't have a problem with this whatsoever. He made some kind of issue that Leftwich will help him because he's African-American.
That may rub some fans the wrong way.
Well, I can see why it would rub some fans the wrong way because, you know, in a team, you're supposed to be colorblind.
Why make it a racial thing?
Well, no, here's why. Here's why I don't have an issue with this. And I can sympathize with Jameis. When Lovie Smith was fired. I believe it was on a Joe Bucks fan video. We hired a news crew out in Hawaii to interview him at the Pro Bowl to get his reaction. I know
You cut a check to Kemper.
We cut a check.
You cut a check.
And some highfalutin analysts, highfalutin media pundits, claimed that Jameis didn't talk when, in fact, he did talk to us. And we
got him on tape. Yeah.
Not only that, we offered the tape. Channel 8 ran it. Channel 10 ran it. Bay News 9 ran it. So that was just. I don't want to get in trouble and say anything more. But that was. Let's just say that was falsifying information. I believe it was on that video where he said he had a special bond with Lovey because that was the first time he ever had a head coach. Ever since he was a little kid playing football. And you saw where he comes from. It's not exactly an affluent white suburb. First time in his life he ever had a head coach that was African American.
And he mentioned it.
Yeah.
And he mentioned
it. I believe it was on our video. I can't remember. I believe it was on the video that he did for us in Hawaii. And I can understand that. I can see, like, you know, flip the coin. Let's say we were living in an area that was predominantly African. Whatever. Doesn't matter. You name the nationality. Polish, whatever. And someone you can relate to was the first time you ever had a head coach. I can understand
there's
that.
Something to be said for it.
I can understand that. And I'm not, you know, some people are trying to say Jameis is racist. That's horse crap. There's nothing about Jameis. There's a remote like that. But I can see that. So
you like the fact that Leftwich will be speaking to Jameis from experience?
Yeah. He brings street cred.
Yeah.
He was on
I think that's a big point.
Yeah, he was on. He's got a ring, too. He's got a ring, too, with the Steelers. He was quarterback. As a matter of fact, didn't he start in a playoff game? He's got street cred. So I think, and of course, Arians, that's his handpicked guy. So I can see why. But the thing that, in Jameis's various interviews, he's dropped this phrase a couple times. It made my antenna go up. When he has stated that they needed coaches that could relate to the players. What's he getting at? Well, he didn't elaborate. You know, of course, if he said it to me, what do you mean, Jameis? Is his cutter, is his mountain? What are you talking about?
It suggests a divide between the players and the coaching staff.
Which sort of reinforces that report that Rapoport had a year and a half ago, roughly, not even a year and a half ago, last December 2017, where he said there was a rift.
He didn't think that he was getting enough support from the coaching staff. Yeah.
And by the way,
all sides denied it.
Yeah.
All sides denied it at the time.
And by the way, did you hear Arian said all Jameis needs is support? Just needs a pat on the back? Where's he coming up with that?
But I love Lee, and it might have been your question. When they brought Arians into the media room after he was at the podium, and that's really where you get the better stuff.
Yeah,
you know, the TV cameras weren't rolling, and it was just the regular men and women that covered the team. And it might have been your question, but like, hey, can you live with Winston's interceptions? And he goes, one.
That's Mark Cook.
That was classic.
That's Mark Cook.
Let's give Cook a little credit.
Yeah, because Aaron kept saying, hey, guy's going to throw interceptions. He was being almost flippant about interceptions. And it was Cook asking him, you're okay with your quarterback going out there throwing 3-4 interceptions? And Aaron's kind of shocked him. That question shocked him. He literally shook in his chair. And he looks at Cook and goes, one.
you know what I thought about? I thought about Arizona's playoff game. I think it was Arian's third year. I think they were 13-3. They went to Charlotte and they got destroyed. They got their ass kicked.
Playoff game, right?
Yeah, it was 49-something.
Yeah, like six turnovers?
I think seven. And I immediately thought, and Palmer was terrible. Carolina had a hell of a defense.
Yes.
I mean, they did. And Carolina's defense even played well in the Super Bowl. Even though they lost, they had no offense. And they just abused Carson Palmer. He must have thrown 4 or 5 picks in that game. And that's what I thought. Now, Lee, you scour everything. Wasn't Arians just quoted in the last few days saying something about how, when you can't run the ball and Winston's throwing 50 balls a game, you can't help but have interceptions.
Yeah.
Didn't he just say something
that? Yes, he did.
That backs up, Lee, and I'm gonna emphasize it again, and you're probably tired of hearing me say it, but I'm a big O-line guy. I admit it. I'm an O-line guy.
Mm-hmm.
And New England's O-line played fabulous in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Brady was sacked once in three games.
Jeez.
And they ran the ball beautifully. Mm-hmm. They averaged 160 yards a game on the ground. 160, that's about a month for the Bucs, you know. So I think Arians is absolutely right. And that's why, Lee, I'm going to say it again, and Steve keeps bringing this up, and I think you'll agree. The one part of this team that Arians has talked about, and he hasn't watched a lot of film yet, but he will, just from talking to people and watching, a little bit of film, is the O-line and how bad how much of an upgrade is necessary. He doesn't talk about the secondary. He doesn't talk about the running backs.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't talk about the kicker. He doesn't talk about the D-line. He goes, we got work to do on that offensive line. He's already talking about it. That's why I think, as bad as the defense is, and I know you're big on that defense, but I think Bowles is going to be creative, and he's going to do some things. And they're going to have some new people. They'll have three new starters on defense.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the focus right now is on boosting the guys in front of Jameis Winston. And if they can get that running game going, Lee, it could make one hell of a difference.
Of course.
This would be a very dynamic offense if they can upgrade that O-line.
Oh, sure. What is the stat? And I don't know it. Maybe you know it. There's some stat out there when Jameis throws less than 30 times,
yes,
his record's ridiculous.
Yes.
So that goes, that backs
up. And when
the point.
He throws over 40 times, it's terrible.
Yeah, and that sort of backs up with Arian's saying. If you're going to throw it more, you're going to throw more picks.
Throw when you want to throw,
yeah.
Not when you have to throw.
About the running game. One of the interviews that Jameis did was with, of all people, Michael Vick. Michael Vick was working for Fox Sports.
Here we, see, now you will have to open these cans of worms over there.
And Vick, that was another interview where the English language got mangled.
They weren't talking about their favorite dogs, were they?
No. All right. So Michael Vick made a statement. I don't know if he was trying to use this word as a pronoun.
Vick was the host of this show?
Yeah, very little. He was interviewing. He was interviewing James. All right. So I don't know if he meant to use it as a pronoun, an adjective, or a verb. But he said something along the lines of, you have to have a stable of running, or no, you have to have a stable running backs. He has. Right. Do you mean stable as an adjective? Do you mean stable as in a noun?
I think he means you need multiple backs.
Yeah, well,
you need
depth. He basically told James you need a running attack, which the Bucs don't have. And this all dovetails to one thing. I'm a big believer in signing Kareem Hunt. Michael Vick, when's the last time, although you sort of did it, when is the last time anyone brought up Michael Vick as an ex-con that did time in a federal lockup?
Very rarely.
Bingo.
Years have gone by.
Ray Lewis skated on a double murder investigation.
He's got a bust for
Kent. And has a statue outside the stadium in Baltimore. We can go on and on and on. Roethlisberger, Kobe Bryant, we can go on and on and on. I'm not in any way, shape, or form condoning what Kareem Hunt did. There's no way you can.
And you know he's going to be suspended.
Well, we know that. Well, here's the thing. And if someone brought this up, I say, sir, sign Kareem Hunt. They go, oh, he's going to be suspended. Yeah? And that suspension is going to be, what, 6 games? How many years are you going to have him after that? Number one. Number two, look at the less wear and tear. He's going to be out for a year. That's big on a running back.
You might get him on the cheap.
Oh, you know you'll get him on the cheap. And the Bucs have a salary cap issue. Or will have. They don't watch their nickels and quarters. You're going to get him cheap. I mean, it just all adds up.
But you're not saying that even an upgraded running back, you're not saying you're ready to come back with the same offensive line. You're not saying that. You're not saying Caleb Benenock doesn't need to be replaced.
Absolutely needs to be replaced. Now, Justin Pulaski, the commish, our friend, he's always thought that the offensive line, it was more of a smash mouth unit that was being coached up to be finesse. He might have a point. We know Jensen's an ornery
Jensen's
guy.
Jensen's a smash mouth. Yeah.
Ali Marpet, you could say that. Yeah. Certainly you could say that with Donovan Smith, as big as he is. There might be something to that. There might be something, you know. People are saying, you know, Jameis needs a second voice. Arians in left, which will be that second voice, because the first voice he ever only knew in the NFL as far as an offensive coach was Cutter. Well, why not use the same standard for Donovan Smith? Warhop was his offensive line coach, only coach he ever knew in the NFL. Now you're bringing in someone else. So maybe his name escapes right now, the new offensive line coach for the Bucs. Maybe he might help. Harold Goodwin, who used to be an offensive line coach. Now he's kind of overseeing the run game. Maybe he will help out Donovan Smith. But you know what? Kevin Seifert. Do you know Kevin Seifert? Is it Seifert or Seifert? With ESPN?
Yeah. Used to be in Minnesota, I believe.
Is that what it was? Does a really good job. And he wrote earlier this week on ESPN, hey, the Bucs don't pay Donovan Smith. Somebody's going to pay Donovan Smith. They said, guys like him, you may argue he's not the best. You may argue he's average.
Unless you think you can do better, Lee.
Unless you can do better. So unless they get this Trent Brown from New England, Donovan Smith's back. They're crazy if they don't.
Be careful with the New England guys. I'll tell you why.
I know where you're going.
Nate Solder, the guy's like 6'8". He's a monster. The guy was ordinary. What makes New England's offensive line,
that old grizzled coach,
that Dante Scarnecchia,
yeah.
He's the best. He is the best.
Well, he retired one year.
He retired. He went out for 2 years, and Belichick said, begged him.
Yeah.
And Belichick don't do that.
Think about that.
We got to have you back.
Yeah, think about that.
He talked him into it.
Think about that. The guy was retired.
Yeah.
And he begged him to come back. Belichick, of all people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all you need to know.
He's the unquestioned guru. The unquestioned.
Well, you brought
now,
up.
Can the Bucs get him? No.
Yeah,
Belichick's
exactly.
Not letting him go.
And, of course, you know, it's a system. I get that. But Logan Mankins did okay. When
they haven't run the ball since Logan Mankins left now, whether that's a coincidence
that's fair.
Or not, they have not.
That's a fair point. I'll say this, since, you know, this is the first time I'm talking here on your podcast. It's Super Bowl because I was up in Atlanta. I think you can put Belichick, as much as it pains me to say, because he's just an unlikable guy. You want to like him, but he's just an unagreeable character.
Hey, I like him now because he
mentioned Gosling.
He mentioned Rick Goslin. That's my boy.
Yeah.
That's my boy.
he'd have to put him over Lombardi.
Don't tell that to the mad dog.
Well,
don't
I mean,
tell that to the doggy.
I mean, Lombardi didn't have.
I think Lombardi was 9-1 in the postseason. And 9-1.
And he didn't have a salary cap. Yeah, 9-1. How many years? What, 8 years? Belichick's been doing this for almost 20.
Yeah. He won 5 championships, I believe, Vince. And
Yeah.
So now Belichick.
Belichick's got 6.
He's got 6.
And now people are.
And it's in the free agent era.
And the Browns have been pretty much, not mostly, pretty much garbage since he left. I think they had 1 playoff appearance since Belichick left.
I can't argue with you. The gap between Belichick and whoever's number 2.
Why?
And you're hard-pressed to pick who is number 2.
Yeah.
Is wide. It's a big, big gap.
Oh, now you bring this up. I don't know how many Bucks fans know this.
And Shiano's joining the staff. Your boy. Yeah, there you go.
That reminds me. I got to text him and congratulate him.
There you go.
Hey, is it a done deal?
I think it's a done deal.
So I'm going to wait for it to be a done deal.
I think it's a done deal.
Of the active coaches, NFL active head coaches, I should say, top 3 winning percentage. Name them.
Current NFL head coaches?
Current NFL head coaches. What? Top 3 winning percentage.
I would think Belichick's at the top.
Yep.
I would say.
And the next two will rankle Russo. There's your hint.
Well, I would think Tomlin
is number 2.
Tomlin, who Russo says is widely overrated. Widely.
He may be right.
You're not going to say John Harbaugh.
No.
No. That's Pete Carroll?
No.
Oh, I thought I had Pete Carroll. Oh. Hold on.
Remember, he had some lousy years at the Patriots.
He did.
Jets.
All right, hold on now. You're killing me. And it ain't now.
Too bad we don't have the Jeopardy theme music.
McCarthy's not in the league, right?
McCarthy's not in the league, so he doesn't count. Ding, ding, ding,
wow,
ding,
that's
ding,
a ding, ding, ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding, ding. I'll go ahead and tell you. Because. Our fans are dying of suspense. Our listeners.
Wait a minute. And it's not Andy Reid.
No.
All right, do it.
Bruce Arians.
Oh! And Doggy likes to say he's overrated.
Yes. That's why I told you they would rankle Russo.
And that's even with the last 2 years in Arizona were mediocre.
Well, here's another one. You bring that up. And I was going to bring it up anyway. You just led me into it. Arians is also, he's tied for 2nd. Biggest winning percentage of any coach in Cardinals history. Tied for 2nd. The number 1 guy was their original coach in 1920.
When they were playing out of where? Chicago?
Comiskey Park, right?
Wow.
1920. That's a century ago. And the 2nd guy who Arians is tied with for winning percentage. Mind you, this isn't Larry Wilson, who coached a couple games. And, interim coaches. This is like guys who coached at least a couple years. Arians is tied with a guy, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. He coached in the mid-20s.
Wow.
So.
Don't forget the job he did at Indy.
Of course.
Which won him a Coach of the Year award.
Of course. Now, mind you, the Cardinals, before he got, Wisenhunt had some good years, too. But the Cardinals were largely a complete and utter laughingstock and an organization for decades.
And they were 5-11 the year before he came.
Yeah.
That's right. Just like the Bucks. So.
Buck fans ought to be excited about that.
Now, Lee, let me ask you this. We try to provide a little perspective here, and we don't like to go too crazy. There is Arians euphoria in the Bay Area, and there's a lot to support that. I understand.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer, but I'm trying to give all angles. Lee, any concern, and I mean any, from your perspective, that Arians won't bring the same juice, the same passion at his age now and having been out of football for a year that he brought to the 2013 Cardinals or that he's here for a couple of years and the only thing in his mind is to promote guys like Leftwich and Bowles and get him into the mix for head coaching jobs. You think he's more obsessed with that than he is turning this franchise around? Any concerns in that area about his motivations?
Not really. I think you guys discussed this with Joe Henderson the last podcast. That's a very valid subject, but I think Arians should be sharp enough to know that if he doesn't win, doesn't matter who the hell he wants to take his place. That's not his call. Now, if they win, he could grease the wheels for Leftwich or Armstrong or Goodwin or Bowles, whomever.
They get go 6-10. Who the hell wants Byron Leftwich
none of
as their coach?
None of those guys are going to get a job. They're all going to be gone. you know, just like Munkin was gone, just like Mike Duffner was gone. You know, they're good coaches, but they're gone for a reason, you know, because they lost. So he's got to turn the thing around now. Is there some concern? He doesn't have that same fire. I think it's a valid concern. Whether that's an accurate concern or valid concern, I don't know. But, yeah, you know, maybe he's learned how to manage his health issues. And to manage that, possibly he's got he learned how to dial things back.
You like his attitude, like, hey, get the hell out of the building at 8 o'clock and go home to his coaching staff.
If you're winning, that's great. If you're losing, why aren't you working more?
Father Dungy would adopted that. I know how much you love Dungy in the Hall of Fame.
Well,
but,
no, I don't I like him as a coach, not as a Hall of Famer.
But that was was Dungy's motto, too.
Well, didn't Arians sort of say to his assistants, if you miss a ball game, if you miss a recital, if you miss a play, I'm firing you. Not about his family.
Like, you can never get that back.
Yeah.
You can never get that back.
Now,
I guess the attitude is, if you can't get your work done by 8 or 9 o'clock, you're not doing it right.
Is that what he said?
You're not doing it right.
Did he say something along the... If you're up in the middle of the night, if you're sleeping in your office...
And you're diagramming plays and... Yeah,
you're stealing someone else's plays. Yeah. If I remember, that's what he said.
Yeah.
You're stealing someone else's plays. Now, oddly enough, I talked to Bill Cowher. I talked to a lot of people when I was in Atlanta. All those stories are coming eventually on JoeBucksFan.com. I'm spreading the wealth, shall we say.
You're like spreading fairy dust over there. Like breadcrumbs.
Pixie dust.
Yeah, they're pixie dust.
Cowher, I tried to get Cowher to give me some dirt on there. I was like, come on, you got to have some stories. Bill, come on. And they had a CBS availability. All the CBS people, about 24 people, they trotted out. And I didn't get a chance to talk to Tony. I wanted to talk to Tony Romo. There was like 30 people around him. Like, I'm not getting... It was almost like, you know how media night is. Media day, they call it opening night now. But you know how that is.
Yeah.
And you're trying to talk to someone at the podium. There's like 30 people there. And you got to slug it out.
What was the weirdest thing you saw that night?
Oh, they dialed that down big time. Big time.
No crazy people showing up with
crazy
outfits?
One guy I saw dressed as a clown. And when I'm speaking about Super Bowl opening night, which was broadcast on the NFL Network Live on Monday evening. It used to be called Media Night. Before that, it was called Media Day. And it used to be a circus. I mean, I'm a complete circus. Now it's not a circus. It's a show.
I told Bassinger not to wear that outfit. What's the matter with you, Lee?
But yeah, it's more of a show. It's like almost like you're walking in a disco. They have the lights going and everything, and they got cameras hovering around in the crowd, and they got bands. It's more of a show.
No starlets wandering around?
Very few. Very few. One of the, oddly enough, and they have a little lunch break in between.
What about that Saints character?
She was there, but she was very moderately dressed.
She was there?
Very modestly dressed. You barely noticed her. She was like business attire.
Oh, my.
Yeah, yeah. But oddly enough, and I was like, I couldn't believe this, the lunch break that they had, sitting at my table was a dead ringer for Lee Spann. The girl might have been 25. Dead ringer for Lee, for those people who don't know.
How'd you end up at her table, the camper?
Well, I was going to say the opposite. How'd she end up at my table?
Oh, boy.
But,
you're supposed to be sitting with your fellow scribes over there, my friend.
Well, I saw Dr. Russo at that point. I was. But yeah, I mean, for people who don't know who Lee Spann is, she's a meteorologist for Channel 8. She's been there for about 12, 15 years, maybe. It was one of not her first job, but one of her first jobs out of college. She's an institution now in Tampa Bay. And she works mornings, weekday mornings, Channel 8. One of two women meteorologists. And look, I mean, dead ringer for Lee Spann only. This girl might have been 25. Dead ringer. Absolute dead ringer.
You didn't think it was her, did you?
I know
better. For a minute?
No, I mean, I know Lee. I mean, I met her one time. She's cool as can be. But at any rate, the media night was really, really toned down. Really toned down. But what I will say is the media availability, Cowher, pardon me, I couldn't get him to give me any dirt on Arians. You know, he had this canary ate a cat, or the cat ate a canary smile, but he told me, he goes, man, we had some battles, because he was running back coach, he had Barry Word, he had Okoye, I always mispronounce Okoye, for whatever reason,
Okoye, yeah.
For whatever reason, I covered the Chiefs a couple games, I still can't figure out that name, it's 20 years later,
and Schottenheimer was the coach,
Schottenheimer was the coach, but Cowher was saying how they'd have battles, you know, he had Derek Thomas, and in practices, Arians would get on Word for like, you can't let Derek Thomas do that.
You gotta pick him up.
And the next play, he would splash Derek Thomas. Then Cowher would get on Thomas. You can't let Barry Word do that. And they would absolutely going at it because it was Arians and Cowher indirectly going at each other.
You know what? That's very positive. It reminds me of Gruden's first year in 2002 in Tampa when, you know, it was his offense, and he brought all these guys in, you know, Joe Juravicius's and the running back and McCardell and Dilger and a couple offensive linemen, and he used to go at it with the Buck defense.
Yeah.
Him and Kiffin. Ah, I'm going to get you, Monty. And, you know what? They ended up winning the Super Bowl. That makes everybody better.
What's the phrase?
You got to have those spirited practices.
What's the phrase Jameis likes to use? He got it from Jimbo Fisher. Iron sharpens iron. But I remember, and this is one of my favorite words, I remember Warren Sapp recounting. That's my recount. I'll have that recount. Warren Sapp was recounting a story that the very first scrimmage they had, they ran a boot on Warren Sapp. And Sapp just started screaming at Gruden, "If you're scared, say you're scared. What is this?" And Gruden shot back at him and goes, "People have been running a boot on you all the time. So what do you mean I'm supposed to do? I'm going to run the boot on you till you can show you can stop it. What are you supposed to..." And him and Sapp are going at it in practice.
Nice. Nice. All right, let's wrap this up, Lee. Anything else on your mind?
Well, I'm going to wrap this up. Well, two things. Real quick about Quan Alexander. Levani David was at Radio Row. And these guys showed up the day I left, Wednesday. After I left, him and Jameis showed up. Cam Lynch was hanging around, but I didn't see him. But he was hanging around. But at any rate, Levani David was raving about the progress Quan Alexander's making in his rehab. I don't know how to take that, but I think the Bucks have an interesting issue with Quan. First off, the poor guy, contract year, blows out a knee. So if the Bucks keep him, it's going to be a bargain, I think. You know, they're going to get him at a discount. You love his fire. You love his passion. You know exactly where his heart is. He's the guy that took on Swaggy Baker. You know, that's the kind of guy you want in your locker room. I say this, and fans get hacked off at me, but the Bucs' defense improved when he was not on the field. You really can't say that about a middle linebacker. You shouldn't say that about a middle linebacker. Now, if you want to argue that was Duffner, I'll give you that. But to me, that's a big negative when a middle linebacker is not available and your defense got better. You shouldn't be saying that.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's an either or. I understand your point. Well taken. But I'll say this for Quan Alexander. His timing was awful. If you're ever going to have a season-ending injury, going into this kind of offseason with your contract. But I'll say this. First thing I got to say is he's got to be a better football player. I'm not going to argue with you. He's not polished. He needs more discipline. He couldn't play for Bill Belichick right now the way he plays. Couldn't play. He's out of position. He wants to make the play. He wants to do that guy's job because he doesn't feel that guy is going to do his job. That's when you get in trouble.
Yeah, doing too much.
So, having said all
do
that.
Your job.
Having said all that, I want Quan Alexander on my football team.
Yeah.
His intangibles are fantastic,
yes.
And I can't discount that. He has a positive impact on his teammates. I can't discount that. With the proper coaching, I think he'll develop quite a bit as a player with the right coaching.
Yes.
And if I'm the Bucks, I don't want that guy leaving. I want to sign him. I think you got leverage. He doesn't. You bring him back. You let Todd Bowles get his hands on him. Linebackers coach get his hands on him. You'll see a new Quan Alexander. I hope for his sake his rehab's doing well. If he doesn't play until the middle of the season, so be it. We saw what happened with not Darrell Revis, but Darrell Revis. I got that right.
I'm guilty of that too.
He was not 100% as a Buck. He was okay, but he wasn't Revis.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes an extra year.
Which you did okay with him.
Quan Alexander's still young. If he was 32, it's a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
So my answer to you is very simple. Quan Alexander should be a Buccaneer in 2019.
I'm still got two stories left. This one I'll add that I ran into Mike Smith in Atlanta. It was the day they were supposed to have.
Unbelievable.
They were supposed to have. It was pandemonium. They were expecting ice storms. They were expecting snow. It was chaos. They closed the entire city down just about. You know, telling people don't get on the roads, don't get on the roads, don't get on the roads. Nothing happened. Well, anyway, knowing all this was going to happen, or thinking it was going to happen, like, man, I better get up early. I better get to the media center early. I may not get an Uber, and et cetera, et cetera. So I get there way early. I get there like at 6:30, 6:45. So I get there. I walk into a coffee shop, a Pete's coffee shop. And
you had just ordered your double latte espresso,
I don't do that.
You're not one of those people?
No, I'm not one of those people. Right. Ordered a coffee and a muffin, And next thing I know, I got some guy say, "Hey, how you doing?" I turn around, there's a guy I didn't recognize because he had a Santa Claus beard, and he's holding his hand out to shake my hand. Whoa, it's Mike Smith.
Had you had a bite of your muffin yet?
No.
Had you taken one bite?
No, I was still at the cashier.
All right.
I was still at the cashier.
And he goes, "Hey, how you doing?"
Yeah. So I was shocked. You know, obviously, we talked a little bit off the record. Off the record means off the record. I can't spill the beans. He had some enlightening things not to say.
Did he address you as Sage?
No. He's not that crazy.
All right.
No. He's not that crazy. And last, I'm going to leave our listeners with a Joe Henderson story.
Do it.
And Florida State fans will love this. Like I said, I'm indebted to Joe Henderson. I can't say enough about the guy. And in his long years with the Tribune, once upon a time, he was, I was going to, hoping, maybe we can in the future. We'll have him. You got to have him back, Ira.
Oh,
got to have this guy back.
He's coming back.
And encore performance we have to have. So he's got to recount this story. There's that word again. But the story I had heard was when he was covering Florida State, and Florida State at the time, and Bowden was very media savvy.
This is one of the great stories of our time.
Yeah, this is before the internet, you know. And this is when papers were papers, and my gosh, every two-bit paper in Florida probably had a beat writer in Tallahassee for
Florida
State.
And it was all
State.
About the deadlines. You got to make a deadline.
Well, Florida State, and again, Bowden was savvy when it came to media coverage.
So it's a night game.
Night game because he knew the Gators played in the afternoon. He wanted that publicity. You know, he wanted a standalone game. He didn't want to go up against the Gators. And he knew the Gators are the university in Florida. Now, I don't know. But
so 7:30 start, 8 o'clock start,
Yeah. Well, the Tribune had a certain deadline, and the deadline came right as the game was scheduled to end. Well, Joe wants to get quotes from the coach, but he couldn't possibly do it because the game is scheduled to end at 10:30, 11 o'clock. That's when the deadline is. It's impossible to get quotes from a coach.
So he leaves the press box.
Well, the days leading up to the game, Joe pulled aside the sports information director, who basically is the PR person. Speaking for people that, you know, don't understand the inside baseball here. The sports information director in college is basically the press liaison to a head coach. So he goes up to the SIDs and he's like, "Hey, would Bowden let me come on the sidelines and get some quotes from him?"
Might have been Wayne Hogan.
Could be.
Yeah.
Can Bowden allow me to get some quotes from him during the second half, during the third quarter?
That seems preposterous.
I can make a deadline, and I can have his quotes in the story. At the time, Southern Miss was a joke of a game.
It was going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the SID, Florida State's SID, was shocked. I mean, revolt. How? What? I'm not going to ask. You know better
than
that.
Joe probably said, well, at least ask him.
Yeah, please ask him.
Ask him.
Just ask him. And he said, the only thing I want is a couple quotes. That's all I need for his story. He knows I'm on deadline at 10:30, 11, whatever the deadline was. I want to get his quotes in the story in the Tampa paper. Now, that's when it meant something. The Tampa paper covering Florida State. Bowden knew. You know, he was trying to catch up with the Gators. And the Tribune was, what, number three paper in the state
and
at the time?
He couldn't wait till Bowden got at the podium. It's too late.
Well, yeah, it's past deadline. He's screwed. So, but Bowden's a savvy guy. He knew for recruiting purposes, for marketing purposes, he's playing catch-up. He wants his quotes in the Tampa paper because he knows hundreds of thousands of people will read his quotes. So he told the SID, sure, I'll give him quotes in the third quarter, which is unheard of then, unheard of now. And so sure enough, third quarter, the SID, you know, Joe saw him in the press box.
Down the elevator.
He like looks at him like, "Hey, you know, we okay?" And he, let's go. And so they went downstairs to the elevator, went to the sidelines, and he told Joe, "Stand by the bench. You wait here." And SID walked up the sideline.
Meanwhile, it's 41-3. Right?
Yeah. Walks up to Bowden. Bowden's got the headset on the sidelines. Walks up to Bowden, taps him on the shoulder, points the thumb at Henderson. He looks, nods his head okay, takes his headset off,
hands it to
somebody, and he walks up to Joe, gave him a couple quotes. That was it. Joe had his quotes. And back then, that was unheard of. Today, that was unheard of. But that just shows you, A, what kind of journalist Joe Henderson is, number one. Number two, shows you what kind of guy Bowden is.
I'm going to try it out with Arians in the second quarter this year and see what happens. Get out of here, Lee. We're done.